Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at a concept that, frankly, feels a bit like attacking the foundations of a religion.
Mm.
If you've been investing for more than, 5 minutes, you have a mantra basically tattooed on your brain.
Yeah.
It's the safety blanket of the whole industry.
You're talking about buy and hold.
Buy and hold.
Yeah.
Exactly. Time in the market beats timing the market. It's just the golden rule.
It is.
We're taught that if you just buy a basket of good companies, ignore the noise, and, wait 20 years, you win. It's passive, it's low stress, and it works. Or, well, that's what we're told.
It is a lovely narrative. It really appeals to our desire for simplicity. Mm. But we're looking at a text today that argues this advice, when you apply it to individual stocks, isn't just a little bit off. It's a mathematical trap.
Which is a pretty bold claim.
Yeah.
We're diving into The Infinite Investor by Jocelyn Dubé, specifically the preface in chapter one. The book is brand new, copyright 2026. So this is some really fresh analysis. And right out of the gate, Dubé is saying we have fundamentally misunderstood the math of the stock market.
He is. And just to be clear, because the name Jocelyn can be ambiguous, the author, Dubé, is a he. And he isn't pulling any punches here.
No.
His central thesis is that investors, we all conflate the market index with individual stocks. We assume that because the S&P 500 goes up over time, the individual parts inside it must also, generally go up over time.
That seems like a logical assumption, though. I mean, if the class average is an A, you assume most of the students are getting A's and B's, maybe a few F's, maybe a couple of A pluses. But generally, the boats rise with the tide.
That's the intuition, exactly. We instinctively see the world through a Gaussian lens, a bell curve. We expect a normal distribution where most things kind of cluster around the average.
Right.
But Dubé's whole mission in this first chapter is to show us that the stock market is not a bell curve. It's a power law environment. And that one distinction changes literally everything about how you should think about building a portfolio.
So this is where we get into the Bessem binder reality. I've seen this reference before, usually with a lot of scary red ink and research notes. It refers to that huge study from 2018 by Hendrik Bessembinder.
That's the one. And Dubé builds his entire argument on this foundation. I mean, Bessembinder went back and looked at the entire U.S. stock market history from 1926.
Okay.
We're talking nearly a century of data. It covers the Great Depression, the wars, the dot-com bubble, everything. He tracked the lifetime return of every single stock that was listed on the major exchanges.
And this is where that idea of the average just falls apart. Because if I buy a stock, I'm hoping for that 8 or 10% annual return we always hear about.
The data says you are statistically very unlikely to get it. Here's the stat that just stops everyone in their tracks.
Okay.
Since 1926, the entire net wealth creation of the U.S. stock market.
Yeah.
It came from just 4% of the companies.
Okay, wait. Let's just sit with that for a second. 4%. That sounds, impossibly low. You're saying that if I look at a list of 26,000 companies over the last 100 years, 96% of them were basically irrelevant to the overall wealth creation.
It's actually worse than irrelevant. The other 96% of stocks, as a collective group, they just matched the return of one-month treasury bills.
T-bills. The risk-free rate. I mean, that's the stuff you buy when you're terrified of losing money.
Exactly. So think about the implications of that. You take on all this equity risk, you suffer the volatility, the bad earnings, the CEO scandals, the sleepless nights.
Mm-hmm.
And for 96% of the names in the database, your reward for all that stress was the same return you could have gotten by lending money to the government and sleeping like a baby.
That completely destroys the risk-reward idea. We're taught that we get paid a risk premium for owning stocks. Dubé is saying that premium only exists in this tiny, tiny sliver of the market.
Correct. The risk premium is concentrated in the outliers. It's not democratized. And this is why Dubé makes such a huge deal about the difference between the average and the median. We don't need a whole math lesson, but in finance, this distinction is lethal.
Well, let's break it down just a little because it's so important here. In a normal distribution-like human height, the average and the median are pretty much the same. The average American male is 5'9". The median male is 5'9". You don't walk down the street and see giants who are 500 feet tall skewing the average.
Right. But in the stock market, you do have giants. You have your Apple, your Microsoft, Nvidia, Amazon. These companies are the 500-foot giants. They pull the average return of the whole market up to that attractive 10% level we hear about.
But the median stock, so the typical experience for a stock picker, that's way, way down at the bottom.
That's right. In fact, Dubé points out that the median stock over its lifetime actually underperforms T-bills. Most stocks eventually fail, or they get delisted or just stagnate.
So when I'm looking at a chart of the S&P 500 going up and to the right, I'm not seeing a picture of corporate America succeeding.
No, you are seeing a picture of that top 4% dragging the dead weight of the other 96% up the hill with them.
That is a disturbing visual.
Yeah.
It suggests that stock picking isn't just hard. It's like structurally rigged against the individual. If I just blindly throw darts at a stock gauge, I have a 96% chance of hitting a dud compared to the market index.
That is the Bessem binder reality. It's a game of extreme skewness. If you miss those huge winners, if you don't own that 4%, you lose, period.
And that's why buy and hold is the lie.
It's why Dubay calls it a dangerous lie for individual portfolios. Buy and hold works for the S&P 500 because the index guarantees you hold the winners. But if you hold a concentrated portfolio of, say, 15 stocks and you miss the Tesla or the Amazon of your generation, holding for 20 years won't save you. You'll just be holding a bag of underperformers for two decades.
It basically turns stock picking into a lottery, where most of the tickets just pay you back the cost of the ticket, and only a tiny handful pay out the jackpot.
That's a great way to put it.
But Dubay argues that even if you get lucky, even if you pick a winner, there's a second trap waiting for you.
Yes. And this is the shift from the difficulty of selection to the difficulty of retention. He calls it the invisible tax.
This is the section on volatility drag. Now, I've heard quants throw this term around, but Dubay frames it as a wealth destroyer that most of us just, we just ignore it.
We ignore it because it's counterintuitive. We tend to look at the arithmetic average of our returns. So if I make 50% one year and I lose 50% the next, my brain says, oh, plus 50 and minus 50, the average is zero. I broke even.
But you did not break even, not even close.
Yeah.
If I start with $100 and lose 50%, I have $50. Then if I make 50% on that 50, I only get back to 75. I've lost 25% of my wealth, even though the average return was zero.
Exactly. That gap, that missing $25, that's the volatility drag. It's the cost of the variance. And Dubay argues this isn't some math quirk. It's a continuous tax that eats away at your compounding.
Let's run a quick scenario because I really want to make this concrete for everyone listening. Let's say we have two investors, Alice and Bob. Both start with $100,000. Alice is boring. She finds a steady asset that just grinds out 8% every single year. No drama.
Okay.
Bob is a stock picker. He chases high beta tech stocks. He wants action.
All right. So Alice is low volatility. Bob is high volatility. Let's say Bob has a wild ride. Year one, he's a genius, up 40%. Year two, the market turns. He's down 30%. Year three, a recovery, up 20%. Year four, another correction, down 10.
Okay, so if you just average those numbers, plus 40, minus 30, plus 20, minus 10, the arithmetic average is 5% a year. So he's making positive returns on average.
Right. On paper, it looks like Bob's making money. But let's look at the bank account. Alice, making her steady 8%, has grown her $100,000 into roughly $136,000 after 4 years. She's compounding beautifully.
And bong.
After his wild ride, up 40, down 30, up 20, down 10, Bob's account is sitting at roughly $105,000.
Wait, so Alice has $136,000 and Bob has $105,000. That's a massive difference.
It's huge. Bob made a positive average return, but he barely broke even in dollar terms. He generated almost no wealth. And why? Because the volatility ate it all. Every time he took a big loss, he dug a hole that required these outsized gains just to get back to even.
That's the invisible tax. Bob paid $30,000 more in math tax than Alice did just because his ride was bumpier.
And Dubay's point is that this tax cannot be deferred. You pay it every single day the market moves against you. He calls it variance drain. The more volatile your portfolio is, the larger that gap becomes between your so-called average return and your real, actual in-your-pocket return.
This paints an incredibly hostile picture of the investing environment. I mean, first, the Bessem binder reality says 96% of stocks won't help you. Then volatility drag says even if you find some winners, the volatility will act like a parasite on your returns.
It's a hostile terrain. That is the specific phrase Dubay uses. The default state of a concentrated portfolio is basically entropy and erosion.
Which leads us to the big question then. If the terrain is this hostile, if the math is rigged against the picker, why has the S&P 500 been such a wealth-generating machine for a century? If most stocks fail, why doesn't the index fail?
This is the real aha moment of chapter one. We tend to think of the S&P 500 as a portfolio, you know, a static collection of 500 big companies.
Sure.
But Dubay argues that's the wrong mental model. The S&P 500 isn't a portfolio, it's an algorithm.
An algorithm for what?
For survival and momentum. Just think about the rules of the index. It is ruthless. It is completely devoid of sentiment. What happens when a company in the S&P 500 starts to falter? Earnings drop, market cap shrinks, stock price crashes.
It becomes a smaller and smaller piece of the index until, eventually, the committee just kicks it out.
It gets deleted. It's fired. And what replaces it? A rising star. A company that's growing, creating wealth, getting bigger. So the index automatically sells its losers and buys more of its winners. It is structurally designed to capture that 4% of super winners we talked about.
So it's momentum investing disguised as passive investing.
Precisely. And this is where the individual investor fails. We don't have that algorithm. We have emotions. When our favorite stock drops 40%, we don't say, well, the data suggests this is a loser. I must eject it.
No, we say, it's cheap. I'll buy more. It has to come back.
We anchor to the price we paid. We hope.
We hope.
And hope is very, very expensive in a power law distribution. The index works because it doesn't hope. It culls. It cleanses itself. And Dubé argues that if you want to survive as an active investor, you cannot just buy and hold blindly. You have to build a mechanism that mimics the index's survival traits.
That's a heavy lift for a regular person. The S&P 500 has no ego. I have a lot of ego. Admitting I was wrong about a stock is painful. The index doesn't feel pain.
That's the psychological gap. But Dubé is saying you have to separate the psychology from the mechanics. You need a structure. He writes, the map has been drawn. What is needed now is a destination, a structure, and a set of instruments to navigate.
He's implying you need strict rules. Rules for when to cut a loss, rules for position sizing, so one bad stock doesn't blow up your whole portfolio.
Yes. You need to artificially create the diversification and the culling mechanism that the index does naturally. Otherwise, you're just walking into a minefield without a metal detector. You're subject to the skewness picking losers, and you're subject to the variance strain, the volatility killing your compounding.
So if we pull all this together, the lie of the average is that we can just flow along and do fine.
Yeah.
The reality is we have to actively fight for survival.
Survival is the key word. And this is where Dubé really flips the script on standard financial advice. Usually you go to an advisor and they ask, what's your return target? Or how much money do you want to make?
Right. I want to beat the market. That's the goal.
Dubé says that's the wrong goal entirely. He says the primary goal has to be, how do I ensure my portfolio survives long enough to find the 4%?
It's a completely defensive mindset.
It is, because if you get wiped out by volatility or if you get stuck holding a zombie stock for 10 years, you're just out of the game. You can't compound if your account is dead.
Survival is the prerequisite for compounding. That's a quote that really stuck with me.
It makes you think of that famous Buffett quote. Rule number one, never lose money. Rule number two, never forget rule number one.
Mm-hmm.
We usually think that means pick good stocks. Mm-hmm. But through Dubé's lens, it means avoid the variance strain. Because once you lose the money, the math required to get it back becomes exponential.
It's asymmetric warfare against your own portfolio. You know, this whole conversation makes me want to go look at my own holdings. I've got a few positions I've been holding on to for years, just, you know, waiting for them to come back.
The hope trade.
Yeah. And after this, I'm realizing that every day I hold them, I'm not just missing out on better returns somewhere else. I'm actually damaging the mathematical integrity of my portfolio. I'm increasing the drag.
You are. And the Bessem Binder stats would suggest the probability of them coming back to beat the market is statistically negligible. You're betting against the house.
Well, on that cheery note.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, this is the kind of reality check we all need. Investing isn't magic. It's not just stonks go up. It's a complex interaction of probability and volatility.
And recognizing that hostile terrain is the first step to navigating it. You stop gambling and you start engineering.
Exactly. So we've unpacked the Bessem Binder reality, the scarcity of winners, and the invisible tax of volatility. The takeaway for our listener, the learner is pretty clear. Don't assume you're the exception. Respect the math. And maybe, just maybe, treat your portfolio a little less like a collection of pets you love and a little more like an algorithm that needs to be optimized.
Ruthlessness is a virtue in portfolio management.
I think I'm going to print that out and tape it to my monitor. Ruthlessness is a virtue. Jocelyn Dubé certainly thinks so.
He certainly does.
Thank you so much for walking us through the math behind the curtain today.
Yeah.
It's a bit terrifying, but it's better to be informed than to be bleeding out from invisible taxes.
Always better to know the rules of the game you're playing.
That's it for this deep dive into the infinite investor. We'll catch you on the next one. Keep your volatility low and your survival rate high. See you next time.